Mark Steiner, and welcome. Before we begin our show today, I want to remember a great human being and a real public citizen who passed away last night at the age of 73, much too soon and much too early, Christine Sarbanes, who is the wife of Paul Sarbanes, a former senator, mother of our U.S. congressman from Baltimore, John Sarbanes. And I served on the Enoch Pratt Library Board with Christine for the last 3 years, and this year as well. Saw her just a few weeks ago, and I was really shocked when I heard the news this morning that she had passed away. We knew that she was ill, but I didn't realize she was that ill, is because even though the Sarbanes family is a very public family, they're a very quiet family and keep things to themselves. One, not to burden the rest of people with those kind of things, to focus on things they care about, the issues in helping America become a great country. And I was really shocked and deeply saddened, and I just want to send our condolences out to all the Sarbanes family and to all the citizens of the state of Maryland at the passing of Christine Sarbanes, who was just a very elegant, bright, committed woman who was a very bright and attractive young woman in England, where she grew up, where she met this dashing Rhodes Scholar who later became a U.S. Senator, Paul Sarbanes. And they had three incredible children who all serve this country in many capacities, and lovely grandchildren. And Christine Sarbanes, we're going to miss you. We know that this funeral service will be very private because they're a private family. But our condolences are out with you, and we will miss you dearly, Christine Sarbanes, and just wanted to remember her and the great public citizen she was, mother and friend. So farewell, Christine Sarbanes. Today we're going to talk about some very serious issues facing urban centers around the country, but we're broadcasting here from Baltimore, Maryland. We're going to talk about Baltimore, Maryland's financial future, and we're facing some critical times. As many as 153 city workers may be laid off. Pools across the city of Baltimore will be closed. Rec centers will be closed. Hours cut back. There'll be a rise in our water fees by 9%. Trash collection goes down to once a week, perhaps. We could lose $18 million in state funds in addition. There'll be workers being laid off, especially for the Department of Public Works and the finance office. And it is pretty severe. And we're going to talk about those cuts, what they mean for the city of Baltimore, what they mean for all of us. Look at what some other cities are doing in a creative way to deal with budget cuts. Are there other ways to deal with this other than closing rec centers and laying people off? Are they looking at all the alternatives? Are these the only alternatives we have? And what lies ahead in the future when we have unfunded pension funds and healthcare funds for retirees looming? And we're not talking about little things looming. We're talking about billions of dollars looming on the horizon when it comes to pensions. And also we'll talk about where those cuts took place and the budget, as we understand it, about the city police department and other things. We'll talk about all those issues with your help at 410-319-8888. This is your community. You may be a commuter in and out of Baltimore. You may live in the area, but Baltimore is the center of the state. We'd like to hear your thoughts on what you think about the budget cuts, how they affect you, how they affect your family, how they affect your community, what you think might be other ways of dealing with it from what you've read, and have questions that our two guests could answer because they have some of the answers with them, we would expect. Joining us in studio right now are Deputy Mayor Chris Thomas-Cuddy, who is Deputy Mayor for Administration for Baltimore City, and Andrew Klein, who is Baltimore City's Budget Director. And Andrew Klein and Chris Thomas-Cuddy, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
410-319-8888 is the number here. 410-319-8888. So these are obviously very tough decisions, and nothing's done yet because it has to go through the city council. There'll be a debate, and there'll be a very public debate here before this takes place, which I guess will be by the end of May when the budget is finalized. Is that correct? Is that when it has to happen legally?
The budget needs to be finalized by near the end of June, and I want to explain to the listeners where we are in the process right now. The mayor has submitted her preliminary budget to the Board of Estimates. The Board of Estimates is the city's fiscal body. The Board of Estimates will consider the budget over the next month, and that includes, let everyone know, that includes Taxpayers Night, Thursday, April 2nd, 6 p.m. at the War Memorial Building. This is an opportunity for citizens to come, have their voices heard. The Board of Estimates can make adjustments to the budget before it sends the budget on to the City Council, and it will do that toward the end of April. City Council will hold a series of hearings, and they need to vote enact this budget by the end of June.
So we clearly will take a look at this before a few more times before we get to that point, so you all can have your say and we can really kind of work our way through this. Now, people talk about the stimulus package coming to Baltimore, which is part of what we'll talk about today, but the stimulus package is very clear about things it will not fund, from what I understand.
That's right.
Swimming pools is one of the things it will not fund. Golf courses it will not fund. The zoo it will not fund.
That's right. The stimulus money is temporary and targeted. We've been emphasizing to the city council, to the citizens, that the stimulus will do a lot of great things for Baltimore, but it's not going to balance our operating budget, doesn't solve our long-term fiscal problems. So I don't want people to expect more than what the stimulus will deliver. We do think it will create a lot of new jobs, at least on a temporary basis, and it's going to do a lot of good in a lot of areas for the city.
And by the way, I'm going to remind you all, on April the 1st, you can join us here at 5 to 7 p.m. downstairs in the communications building for a live town meeting with Deputy Mayor Andy Frank and other city officials and community leaders talking about the stimulus package and your visions for the future of the city. You can bring those to the air right now at 410-319-8888 and also join us on Wednesday, April the 1st for a live two-hour town meeting here on the campus that will broadcast live on WEA right here. But let's just talk about these budget cuts and how and why decisions were made. When you look at these budget cuts that we've done now, and we decided to close rec centers at the Rosemount Palace Center will be closed on Rosedale, and on East Madison Street, the Bocek Palace Center is going to be closed. Some will be transferred to the city school system. Eastwood Recreation Center on Bentlow Street is going to be closed. If those are your neighborhoods, join us here at 410-319-8888. Let us know how that will affect you. And a lot of other rec centers, like the Ralph Young on Fayette Street, North Harford on Hamlet Avenue, Parkview Rec Center on Francis Street, the one in Violetville over on Allendale on the west side, Roundview will all be down to 4 hours a day, including Collington Square. So the question I have in Carroll Cook, which is over on Eagle Street in the east side, those will be shortened, and pools close at City Springs on East Baltimore Street, the Great Model Pool in West Saratoga, and the Ambrose Kennedy Waiting Pool over on Enger Street. So the question is, did they have to close? Are there other ways to have addressed this issue other than closing rec centers and pools? Could you have not turned them over? Well, can we ask you, I'll let you answer first, I'll follow that up.
Mark, I'd say these are not normal times.
They're not normal times.
These are unusual times for the city in terms of the budget and the crisis, the fiscal crisis we're facing. I think previously we had 46 rec centers operating, and on the police department, they were operating 14 PAL centers. So what the plan is to have those who are best at recreation providing the recreational programming in the city. And so we want to transfer the PAL centers over to recreation and parks. We're going to end up with 57 rec centers in the city, whereas now we have 46. We're going to be increasing the number of rec centers. The total number of facilities will decrease, but we think the quality of the programming, the quality of the recreational services is going to improve because those who are good at recreation are going to be in charge. And we think that's similar to the way we've approached a lot of other problems.
Well, there are a number of things that raises. I mean, one is that there was a whole philosophy about cities and police, and one of the reasons you had PAL centers was because it was to build a relationship between the police and young people. That's over.
I don't think the police department are abandoning kids by any means. I still expect Commissioner Bielefeld to have his districts and the district majors involved in recreation.
But they won't be in the recreation centers.
They won't be staffing the recreation centers.
And some of those are going to be only open 4 hours a day from 2 to 6 p.m.
Some of them, their hours are going to be changed to mirror when people are there. Right? Some of the facilities are better suited to just after-school programming because that's when the majority of the kids were there. And they weren't there later at night. But for where we have kind of a continuum of service need, we've carried those hours forward.
I guess what I'm trying to push here, and I'm curious what our listeners think, and maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree, And I want you to help me bark up the right tree, folks, at 410-319-8888. It's your community, your neighborhoods, and you're going to have your say in what happens in the city. So join us here as we're joined by Deputy Mayor Chris Tomascutti and Andrew Klein, who's the city budget director. Huge cuts were announced, not just in Baltimore, but across the country. 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts? Bring them to the airwaves. We'll get you right on the air. But there are some people would argue there could be creative alternatives to closing rec centers or pools. Why not turn them over to nonprofit centers? Why not take a swimming pool and say, we're going to find volunteer guards trained and certified to watch the pools? Let neighborhoods take them over. Why not take a rec center that you would close, especially, let's say, like in Rosemont and Bocek, which are neighborhoods that have a lot of problems with juvenile crime, a lot of problems with crime all around them, and say to somebody like groups like On Our Shoulders or ROCAP that works with kids in the West Side or Nargis Hyman's Be Spirit in Park Heights and say, we're going to give you this building, run it, and take care of the kids in the neighborhood instead of closing them down and kind of pick up on the volunteer spirit that we see President Obama keep talking about. Why not think of creative ways rather than closing centers?
Well, I think the reality of the situation is that just as we are feeling a budget crunch and we had to, in order to maintain a zero growth budget, we had to cut $65 million out of the operating budget, most of our community partners are also in a similar fiscal crunch. And so we do have at least two of our recreational programs that are managed by foundations and private groups. I think to the extent others kind of are available and can provide kind of a guaranteed year-round level of service, we would obviously entertain them as a service provider. But some of those conversations have been had, and it comes down to capacity, like how much can you provide over the course of the year?
But I mean, what I'm saying is, you mean, we do have, and you're not privy to all this, I'm sure, Chris, but I mean, there are groups in the city that have been looking for empty buildings and rec centers to run their programs for kids. They have federal and state funding. They have no places to go. They have small centers to work out. Why not turn those centers over to them? Allow them to do their work, fight violence in the community, work with kids in trouble, and use those facilities for something creative rather than just the response usually is to shut things down and start thinking of different ways to do things.
I think we'd be open to that. I think if there are groups who want to work with some of the centers in those specific areas that we were looking at, if they could show kind of a solid plan to provide service year-round, I think we would always look at that. But for now, given the cuts that we're facing as a city, these are some of the decisions that we're trying to put in place.
Let me open the phones, because Andrew, you want to jump in here, we'll open the phones.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that
Andrew Klein, we're budget director for the city.
The budget realities forced us to take a comprehensive look at all of these facilities, and the ones that have been selected for closure, typically they were underutilized, they're in very poor condition, they are near other facilities, and in some cases, we actually had conflicts between the schools that the center was located in and the school programming. So rather than get in the way, we're getting out of the way. So I think those decisions were made on sound basis. And as Chris said, of course, we would, if we can find good nonprofit partners to work with, we will certainly entertain that, whether it's in these facilities or other facilities.
Let me open the phones here as we talk about the city budget cuts. Your thoughts on that? We're joined. You just heard Andrew Klein, the city's budget director. And we're also joined by Chris Tomascutti, who is deputy mayor for administration. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Joe in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Yes. I just have a quick question, because when I was growing up, I lived right across the street from a recreation center in the Edmondson Village area on Gelston Drive in Allendale. And the recreation center was a big part of my upbringing. I played baseball. They had a tennis court. They had a basketball court. And we even had lights. And we played basketball sometimes till 2 and 3 in the morning. And that was, like I said, that was a major staple of my upbringing. If you close all these centers, where and what do you expect for these kids to do?
Who wants to grab that? Chris? Do you want to grab that? I think it's more of a mayor question than it is a budget question.
No, it is a good question. And again, in normal times, we would never want to make any impacts on recreational centers. But given where we are, we try to be strategic in finding locations that were near other centers that had other offerings of recreation in the neighborhood.
But just the reality, we know how neighborhoods go in a lot of cities, and in Baltimore is no different. That there are some neighborhoods where you don't cross the street in a line to get to one of the neighborhood's recreation center. There's all kinds of issues involved in that. I mean, so I guess what I'm asking of the mayor's office is again this kind of thinking of reaching out to churches in neighborhoods, reaching out to other places and communities to try to figure out alternative ways to shutting things down. Another example I would ask, like, would be Andrew Klein is other cities. Like, I know in Montgomery County, which is not a city, Montgomery County jurisdiction, Montgomery County teachers did not take a 5% raise that they were owed by contract and said, we're going to not take this raise so no teachers are laid off and no programs are closed in Montgomery County schools. They saved $87 to $100 million, if I'm correct, somewhere in there. They saved for the county budget by doing that. So why have we not thought about every city employee taking a furlough? Or the highest paid employees giving back their raises? The mayor gave back her raise. The president of the city council did not. I mean, why not across the board, no raises and furloughs to save jobs?
Well, 2/3 of our employees under this budget proposal would not receive any raise in fiscal 2010. So we certainly are looking at every place where we can find reductions, and I think we're doing that creatively. We're trying to look to the future with this budget and not use Band-Aids like furloughs. And the reason I call it a Band-Aid is when we head into fiscal year 2010, there's still a lot of uncertainty about our revenues, even after the state is done with its work. And that may hit us for another 20 or 30 million. So the reductions, unfortunately, are not over. But even beyond that, we don't know the depth and duration of this recession, how that's going to affect our income tax. As conservative as we try to be, it seems like we can't be conservative enough. So we're going to need to have options when we head into the fiscal year in case things don't go as planned.
Let me open the phone. I might have another thought about the furlough question, but 410-319-8888. Gordon in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Thank you ever so much for taking this call.
Thank you for calling.
I'm a retired recreation person, and I am very, very upset of how the city appears to be playing games with the most precious gift that God has allowed man and woman to have as a child or children. Now, we went through this with power. They told the neighborhood groups when they met, oh, we're going to have police in the center. And quite naturally, the old folks were saying, oh, yeah, this is exactly what we needed. But if you really check the record, you find out most of them had a one-eyed monster called the DB and a basketball. That's not programming. But if you check the record again and see how many young people have profited by having recreation centers, we're talking about cutting crime rate. The other day I was up on Dofield Avenue. I saw 20 little kids in an alley shooting around on a makeshift goal and a raggedy basketball. We can get money for whatever we want. We can do whatever we need to do. We must look out for our children. We can't just dump them off into the streets. We have to do better than what we're doing. Solution, one of them, I'm trying to find out whose voice are these people listening to. It's certainly not really the neighborhood people. Why can't we? I think I just heard you. Hold on, he's coming over in my lane. Go ahead, sir. God bless you.
Gordon, you still there?
Right. Yeah, I'm still here. And I mean, those are trained people. Powell came in with policemen. We're talking about graduates with degrees and master degrees in recreation. And young people I'm meeting today after retired for almost 13 or 14 years. Saying what an influence you were in my life and their children's lives.
You raise a very, very important and passionate point, and I think that's what I was trying to say earlier was there may be other ways, there should be other ways to address this. There are a lot of people who know how to work with children and know children who are dying for places to work out of.
Mark, I think that's Gordon's point is a good one, in that we recognize that we had maybe a police officer and some community service officers and a few other people in a Powell Center, and the TV may have been playing too great a role in that program, whereas we have a new recreation and parks director who has a vision for what recreational programming in the city should be for kids. We want to expand that from just 46 locations to 57 and get 24 police officers back out on the street where, you know, I very much want to see them in terms of a physical presence.
Well, when we talk about the police, and Gordon, thank you for your call, and I hope you continue tuning in and take part in the speak out that will be taking place on April the
2nd.
April
Tax
the 2nd.
Taxpayer night. Thank you.
410-319-8888. Tiara in Randallstown, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Tiara.
You know, my question is, I believe that you all have done some really strategic thinking around closing these rec centers. I guess my biggest concern is that are there any stipulations that are attached to this? Because when the economy turns around, will you then open them up again as rec centers, or will they be sold out to private individuals?
That's a great question. Andrew Klein, can you grab that?
Sure. We will certainly look at that when the economy turns around. And you know, the question is, it's not if but when, and we think it could be a few years, unfortunately. But keep in mind, as I pointed out earlier, a lot of these facilities are they're not very functional. They're too small. They're shared with schools that really need the space. Because the schools themselves are seeing some increased enrollment and are growing, and they are in poor physical condition. So we really need to keep assessing the entire network of recreation facilities. But again, yes, when revenues rebound eventually, we will look at everything again.
So, but Montebello on East 32nd Street and the Kendrick Center on Callaway are the ones that are going to the school system.
Yes, right.
Right. So, coming back, before we go to Al and Melvin, our next two callers up, I'm going to go back to the issue of furloughs. I mean, we're saying that this downturn in the economy is temporary. So, why doesn't a temporary problem like this, we hope it's a temporary problem, we don't know where the financial crisis and where that's going to lead us, is different than the crisis we had in the 30s, very different. It's not overproduction, it's money being misused used in very strange ways. But the question is, why not a Band-Aid approach temporarily? Why not a furlough? Other localities and the state government have all issued furloughs. I mean, the governor is taking, a two-week furlough? Why not put all employees on a two-week furlough? I mean, at Walter's Art Gallery, to survive, all the top employees are taking a month's furlough. And other employees are taking 2 weeks furlough. I mean, why not put people on furlough for this year rather than laying off? I'm sure if you took a vote of city workers, they would probably say we'd rather take a furlough than lay off our fellow workers to get this done.
Mark, I think if we were talking about how do we close a budget gap for this current year that ends on June 30th, furloughs would be an option because that would be a temporary solution to a problem that we don't expect to be there next year. But we can't say at this point, going into July 1st for our next fiscal year, that at the end of the year, everything's going to be fine, right? And we won't have to do additional cuts. We would rather use a furlough to shore up an existing year's budget problem than try to plan for the future, because the gap is still there. And so that's why we're trying to find a more permanent solution, although as kind of heavy and difficult it would be to lay off employees. But we then reduce the size of the budget. Furloughs maintain the size of your budget.
And where I want to Al, Melvin, Chris, we're coming in. I think we all need to know this question. Who are the 153 workers who are losing their jobs? What areas? Where are they going to be laid off from?
About half of them are sanitation workers. We're proposing to shift in this budget from the current trash collection, recycling collection, twice a week trash, once every other week recycling, to once a week trash, once a week recycling. The Department of Public Works has redrawn the collection routes to make them more efficient. So we think that this is really an efficiency gain for the city. It allows us actually to free up a number of street and alley cleaning crews so we can do more proactive street and alley cleaning, whereas now it's mostly reacting to 311 calls. So we think this is going to be a benefit.
How does that work? Why, if you have to cut sanitation crews, how are you going to add people to clean alleys in a more effective way?
We have street and alley cleaning crews collecting recycling now. Under the new system, that won't be necessary, and they can spend their full time cleaning streets and alleys.
Are you going to allow then to make it easier for individuals to, as a community, dump their trash in the dumps rather than waiting for the city pickup once a week? Because right now it's pretty difficult to just go take your car or take a truck and go, okay, I'm going to the city dump to dump. Are we going to change the rules to allow people to dump their trash more easily?
The community drop-offs will still be in service. We have not looked at, do we need to expand the hours? The other component of the one-in-one trash collection is that we're looking to adjust the collection time. So a four-day-a-week, 10-hour schedule. And so then we'd have an extra day also of activity to where kind of the alleys and things could be taken care of. And again, we think with the growth of recycling in the city, the single-stream recycling has been incredibly successful in the city. We've increased our recycling rates by more than 30%. We are one of the few large cities that still collects trash twice a week. In most cities, the objective is to get to where it's once a week trash and once a week recycling, and we think we're evolving to that point.
Let me go to the phones here. 410-319-8888, and the order you've called in, I think the Melvin, you're first, and then Al, then Crystal. Melvin, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
My name's Melvin. I appreciate you taking this call.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know, if you close all these recreation centers and you give these kids to the streets and they get involved in crime and drugs and gangs, don't you think it's worth it to keep the recreation centers open to alleviate that?
Andrew Klein's our budget director.
As Chris has talked about, we're going to be putting professional recreation leaders into the PAL centers. So even though we are closing some facilities, we think overall we're going to increase the structured recreational programming for youth through this plan. And we've selected facilities for closure where within generally about a half mile, there's another facility for the young people to take advantage of.
Well, I would just go to the phones for a while. Let me do that. 410-319-8888. Melvin, thanks for you for your call. And Al in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Al.
I've had experience with working with juvenile services for the past 20 years, from Annapolis to Baltimore. I've sat in steering committees, and I have to admit, most of the time it's, what are we going to do with these kids? Give them a blacktop and a ball, and they'll be okay. Now, closing that many rec centers in the areas that you mentioned are very high crime areas. They're very well populated with young black males that get in trouble all the time. And you're going to close them during a period like 45 days away from the school year closing? You're going to put more kids out in the street with nothing to do. We need our police. I agree with that. But these kids need mentors. They need encouragement. They need to know that this city is behind them. We went through that before when it was a campaign of the city that reads, and the first ordinance was close down the libraries in all the little black neighborhoods. You know, we went through that kind of stuff. And as far as the finance part, it's going to cost the small businesses in those neighborhoods and these malls a lot more money with those kids running in those malls, getting in trouble, than it will be for them to have those kids in a substantial rec center or some type of program.
Let me just, Al, we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to tackle that question and go to Crystal in Baltimore, who has three children who use rec centers. John and Malcolm have called in. We'll go to their calls as well. We'll also look at the question of what's coming next. And what's coming next are billions of dollars in unfunded pension issues facing the city and cities across the country. What's our response to that? More cuts coming in the upcoming years? 410-319-8888. Join us here as we talk with Deputy Mayor Chris Thomas Cuddy and our City Budget Director Andrew Klein. 410-319-8888 is the number here. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. For more information, go to mecu.com. Stay with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back to look at our city. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And we are joined by Deputy Mayor Chris Thomas Cuddy, who is Deputy Mayor for Administration, and Andrew Klein, who is Baltimore City Budget Director, to look at the budget cuts affecting Baltimore, how they're going to affect you and your community, the reasons behind them, and try to tackle in this hour some of the issues we have not touched upon, like the cost of your water bill going up and issues facing the future of the city. 410-319-8888. We're going to answer the question that Al brought up, but let's go to Crystal because I think they're tied together. And Crystal in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, Crystal.
I'm calling because, you know, I'm a parent of three children who attend one of the rec centers that would be closed or they're proposing to close.
Which one's that?
It's Waverly.
Okay.
Waverly Child Care. And there is another center there at the school, but I feel I, as a parent, should have the freedom to choose the recreation center that provides the best care for my children. And the one that I chose, you know, the employees, they are so great with the children, between trips and arts and crafts. The things that they do with my children are priceless. And me as a parent, being able to work in school, you know, and go to school, and be at ease as far as, you know, my children being safe, that is priceless. And I think it's disgraceful that it's even an option to take that comfort away from parents in Baltimore City. So aside from all of the children who may not have a place to go if their parents don't relocate them to one of the other centers, aside from that, you're going to have a lot of parents who have issues as far as working and going to school and carrying on with their everyday lives.
All right, Crystal, that's a very powerful question. So let me then we'll come back to Al's question. What about that? Why? I mean, it seems like this is kind of, I think, a sense that Crystal has and many people have in this community, that whenever we have these cuts, they're always laid at the doorstep of working people. You know, I mean, pools close, this closes. And working citizens like Baltimore, like Crystal, need places for their children.
Yeah, it is a good question. I have a 2-year-old and one on the way here in a couple of weeks, so I understand the importance of child care. This particular child care center was being run by our Recreation and Parks Department. Over the past close to 7 or 8 years, we've been shifting that responsibility out of Rec and Parks to other areas in the city, and this is kind of the finalization of that plan. So there are two Recreation and Parks funded child care centers that are closing. Crystal, someone should be working with you to help you identify other locations nearby, and I think one is also at that location. There are other city-provided child care centers, and this is one of those other examples of where we didn't see the need for multiple city agencies to be providing the same resource. Right now we have child care being provided by our housing department, and that's where we want, and it's a very good program. They have very good results, and that's where we want to start.
So those people get laid off, we're running the center where Crystal takes her kids?
The center is partially funded by the general fund, so the employees at that center, those positions would be abolished.
So they would be laid off?
Yes.
So that and again, that's why I always keep going back. I know what you said about furloughs earlier, but philosophically and just pragmatically, I know it's not a long-term solution, but it clearly is a way to keep people in jobs and for everybody kind of row together in the same boat, as opposed to like making the cuts that seem to affect working families so deeply here.
Well, I wrote in the preliminary budget that the city leaders need to brace themselves for a series of difficult budgets. This may not be the worst. And that's because all the experts are telling us that, you know, when the economy does recover, it will be a slow recovery. You mentioned we face rising pension costs.
Right.
And a lot of other costs are also rising, and we don't see the revenues rebounding to meet those rising costs in the near term. So that's why we're avoiding short-term solutions. We're trying to find long-term solutions, making our programs more efficient, such as the 1+1 program. Unfortunately, you know, in some cases, having to consolidate or close some facilities, and we're trying to do that the most strategic way we can.
Well, let me ask this question before I move ahead. It's going to be about pensions, so we'll go back to the phones. First of all, where does Crystal go to find out about what to do with her children now if this is going to be closed? Who does she talk to?
The Department of Rec and Parks, when this closure does take place, assuming that stays in the budget, you know, that would be the budget's effective July 1. The Department of Recreation and Parks is going to be reaching out to the families of affected by the closure of the child care centers and helping to get the children placed in other quality programs.
Do we know how close they'd be to Waverly, where she lives?
We do know there are some programs nearby within a mile and a half of the Waverly Center.
I mean, these might be minor questions for some people, but for people who live around the corner from a place where they drop their children off, they can trust the people working there. I mean, it's your child you're dropping off. You know, it's not your car.
Absolutely.
I mean,
there are three publicly funded child care centers within 3 miles of that location.
So what do we do in the outlying years? I mean, the little I've been reading about this, unless you can tell me, you will tell me if I'm wrong or right about this, Andrew Klein, but there's $1 billion, at least in unfunded pension mandates. They've risen, the cost is probably maybe, was it fivefold? $2.9 billion in unfunded health care liabilities that we're facing? I mean,
in terms of looking at the long-term
this
liabilities.
This is for the pensioners, people who are retired city employees.
It is a scary issue. I think that's part of the reason why we've had to take such drastic measures with the budget. On July 1st of this year, just for our fire and police pension plan alone, we will pay $82.8 million into that fund. From the general fund.
From the general fund.
From the same fund of money that we're talking about that supports rec centers, pools, child care centers, trash collection, all the general operations of the city. That's what pays for our fire and police pension. On top of that, there will be another $43 to $45 million for our employee retirement system. So we're looking at a $125 million payment to support the pension plans this July 1st. The scary part, and what Andrew keeps referring to in terms of the future kind of risk and why we're going to have multiple bad budgets, those costs are escalating at kind of an astonishing rate. We will pay at least another $110 million next July for the fire and police pension system. And why this is important, I'm glad you're raising the issue, that's a $40 million increase in 2 years to our general fund budget. Things cannot stay the same. We will have to make drastic cuts or raise the property tax, neither of which we want to do.
Well, I mean, the property tax would be a show that we're going to do coming up, because, I mean, maybe the state needs to look at a different way of doing property taxes. I mean, I've always been amazed that the state doesn't have a property tax from Ocean City to Garrett County, from Harford County to Lansdowne to Prince George's County, one property tax, and divide the money up between localities so people can take care of their roads and schools. I mean, it's absurd. So poor cities like Baltimore get jammed because we have to raise property taxes. It doesn't make any sense. It's like an arcane system from the 18th century.
Yeah, our property tax rate is more than double everyone else around here. So
it also, and we're going to go back to the phones right after this, it seems to me that we're talking about all these health care costs, so why aren't the mayors of America, including our own mayor, Sheila Dixon, saying what President Obama said in 2003, which he's not saying now, which is the only system that makes sense to save us money for health care, is a single-payer system. Why aren't the mayors gathering together to say, we have to have a system that takes this burden off of cities and off corporations and off Americans to give health care to all Americans? I mean, the unfunded health care costs for Baltimore City and other localities are going to sink us if we don't do something different. I know you have a difficult time answering the question because you can't speak for the mayor politically, but I mean, that's an issue.
Absolutely, it is. And that's part of those fixed costs that we stare in the face every year and have to grapple with even before we get to things like recreation centers and trash collection, as Chris said. And we were facing, and I think Chris mentioned this also, a cost of $65 million over this year's budget just to continue our same level of services next year. And we had no revenue growth. So that was the gap we faced, and that's why we're talking about such difficult, gut-wrenching decisions about spending the taxpayer dollars.
Mark, let's see what our citizens have to say here. And what were you going to say something, Chris, before we do that?
I was going to say on the health care costs, I think over the past few years we've been doing the right things in terms of working with our labor unions to renegotiate some of our terms in terms of with regards to health care. Now, the pension costs are something that are just looming in front of us and we're going to have to address. And, you know, we've had a lot of people call in about who care, and you can tell they have a passion for recreation systems. And, you know, I mentioned a $40 million increase in 2 years. The entire budget of the Department of Rec and Parks is $25 million. That's the scale of the problem that we're dealing with. It dwarfs some of our city agencies. And so we have to figure out a way to get through this fix. And that's why you've seen the mayor submit a couple of pieces of legislation to try to start getting at that problem.
I would just say, humbly, capitalism is in trouble. 410-319-8888, as we talk with Deputy Mayor Chris Tomaschetti, Deputy Mayor for Administration here in our city, and Andrew Klein, our City Budget Director, talking about the budget crisis the city faces, the cuts they're planning to make. The arguments and discussion will take place over the next 2 months around these issues. And we just finished talking about what the future looks like, which is not very optimistic when you look at pensions and health care costs that are looming on the horizon. Billions of dollars. 410-319-8888. Sean, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm calling in reference to closing out of recs. Thinking that back when I was young and the recs were open, it was basically run by community activists within the communities that supported the community, that knew the kids and knew their parents. And the kids were when I was growing up, I actually came out a lot better based on I knew that the people that was running the facility kind of like knew my family. And training the community to be able to deal with the kids within the community, I think that would be a success for maintaining the recreation system.
What I was saying, Sean, it kind of tails what I was talking about earlier, which is, this is a time when we're facing really tough decisions here, and which is why we're having a polite conversation, not beating up on anybody, because these are tough decisions we have to make. But the question is to think again beyond bureaucratic norms. I mean, Sean is saying, why not train citizens and communities to do some of the work and call on the people of this community to be the volunteers to fill some of the hole? They can't go into a burning building and bring people out. They're not trained firemen, but you can be trained to work with children and keep things going in neighborhoods.
Right. I know that Wanda Durden, who's our director of recreation and parks, has put a big emphasis on building more partnerships, and that includes recruiting volunteers to work with young people. And you know, I don't know that that would bring back a facility, but I think it will enhance the network of recreation facilities that we would have funded next year. And before I came to the city, I worked at the Corporation for National and Community Service, runs AmeriCorps, the domestic volunteer program. So I'm a big believer in leveraging volunteer service to enhance what nonprofits do, what government does. And you know, I certainly, from my position, will do everything I can to promote that kind of thinking in our agencies.
I mentioned fire departments. One of the things that was on the budget cutting block, at least as I've read, was the ladder company in downtown Baltimore, which is the only ladder company in downtown where we had nothing but tall buildings. So are we thinking this thing through clearly about what companies to close?
I think so. I mean, Chief Clack, our fire chief, has done a very good job of being strategic in the way, I think, the way he approached the budget. Again, in normal times, I don't think we would ever want to even talk about a unit disbandment or unit closure in the fire department. So, again, no fire stations are closing. There are two specific units, two pieces of apparatus that would be taken out of service. Most of our downtown buildings are very well sprinklered, and they have a different fire code level. We have good surrounding truck coverage in neighborhoods surrounding downtown. And when you look at where we had structure fires, downtown has not been one of the locations that's seen a lot of greater percentage of the fires. So if you must make that decision, and in this budget situation we must make that decision, that particular truck was a good choice.
Well, let's talk about an agency, then we'll go right back to the phones. I'm losing callers here because I'm talking too much. Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. And, John, you've been holding on forever. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
You're on the air, John.
Hello.
John, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. About closing the recreation centers and the reasoning for it to free up police, was it?
For the PAL centers, the police athletic leagues.
Right. I don't think that's a good idea. And my reasoning is, you're taking a policeman who has personal contact with young people who recognize him and he can recognize them and putting him in a police car and isolating him where nobody knows him anymore.
Well, this is the issue whether the PAL centers should be closed. I remember when they became all the rage to create police athletic leagues. And, you know, even in the police department itself, the city in its budget unfunded the community relations unit, decimated their ranks. Colonel Rick Hype was the head of that, and that was a very critical unit that saved dozens of young people from gang violence, and it's gone in favor of 200 officers who are involved in plainclothes running in the city. There's a real philosophical difference about what you do here. A city gang unit only has four people in it, and it seems to me that we're undercutting our best work and how we approach it. So what was the logic in cutting Rick Heights and other and the Marine unit was cut to the bone in the city police?
The logic behind the Marine unit and the community relations unit was that, as we talked about earlier, during the course of this year, we had to meet a reduced budget target. And so the police department looked to see what was the best way to save, at that point, I think roughly almost $7 million. And they did not want to impact certain operational units. Community relations, they still have the liaisons. It's just their primary role is to be a member of a district. So the Hispanic liaison, their primary role is to be an officer within a district. And they still are able to go out and serve as liaison to the Hispanic community. Same thing for the liaison to the Muslim community. Their primary role is police officer. Their secondary role is as liaison. They're still providing that same service. The Marine unit, it was just a decision that based on volume and at what time of year, where could we scale back to save some initial funding? And it was across the board. They've done a lot of things in the police department, from reducing vehicle costs to Blackberries to you just name it, anything they could do to not decrease presence out on the street.
But I guess what I'm pushing with that is the idea that the work, we have all these units, some of them involved in a lot of shootings, and we had that policy saying that we're not going to identify police shooters, which is being challenged and looks like it's being changed. And there have been a lot of critiques of those units in the street, but a unit that actually saved lives and worked with kids was a community relations unit, and they're cut. And the gang unit is not bolstered.
I would argue that every officer ought to be involved with kids, and every officer ought to be involved.
You know, the reality is not that. The reality is certain police do a certain job, and they're out there with young people.
But we're looking at 24 officers from the PAL centers going back out on the street. You know, I think our expectation and the absolute expectation that's been delivered to the Department of Rec and Parks is we want to see better programming at those locations where you're coming into. We expect more than what we were seeing as a PAL center. And for those officers, we expect there to be a continuous involvement with kids. And I think Commissioner Bielefeld's been very clear that he's not abandoning kids. He's got great ideas about police being involved with baseball leagues, about potentially having roll calls in recreation centers, about having officers stop by their rec centers as a part of their post. Like, we must engage. That is crystal clear to all of us.
Let me go back to the phones. 410-319-8888. Michael, you're on the air. Michael, are you there? Michael, you on the air?
Yes, can you hear me?
You're on the air, yes. Thank you for waiting.
Okay. Yeah, glad to hear that last comment. One, I wanted to say that the, today when you manage cities, you're effectively managing decline, so I want to acknowledge that these guys have tough decisions to make.
But they
I
do,
want to
very also, tough decisions.
Yeah, and but I want to also make sure that, you know, while that's the case, that, you know, as we're cutting as it's necessary, that there's some thought or an eye toward quality. So, for instance, you know, a gentleman said, you know, we're going to close and there's a rec center or another child care center within the neighborhood. Well, we know what, you know, that means in terms of class sizes or student sizes. And if there's no offset, you know, then you're creating another, you know, whole set of externalities. And so my question is, do you have, you know, just as you're looking at redundancies and sort of the negative impact of cross agencies, are you looking for strategic opportunities? I mean, there are a whole host of programs that have been studied and shown to work all across the country. And, you know, but are you looking at, you know, opportunities to kind of get outside your silos and combine resources with other agencies, private, public sector, to maybe affect some of the things that you want in terms of cuts, but also keep the quality high?
That's a really good point. Andrew Klein, budget director.
I mentioned we have new leadership in the Department of Recreation and Parks, and not just at the top, but Wanda Durden has also brought on some lieutenants who are bringing a lot of experience and a lot of enthusiasm. And I mentioned also that she's really emphasizing the partnerships. So partnering with nonprofit organizations, with the private sector, recruiting volunteers. I think you will see more creative programming across the network of recreation facilities.
What about the increase in the water costs? People have written into the Sun of the places I've seen saying that their bills are like $100. What did I just read here the other day? Bills are $100 every 3 months, where in Baltimore County, water bills are only $8 to $10 a quarter. And we seem to own the water supply. Where's the parity, and why are we paying so much? Now we're going to pay more.
The rate increase is, let me put it in context. The city is under a consent decree with the federal government, with the state, requiring us over the next, I think that through 2015 now, upgrade our wastewater system. That means separating the sewage from the stormwater so that the sewage doesn't back up into people's basements anymore. I think people can relate to that. But it comes at a cost. This is a $1 billion capital program. And in order to fund that program...
Is that funded by bonds or other things like that?
Those bonds are backed up by the revenue of the authority. The authority is self-sufficient. So whatever funding is needed to meet those mandates... this is 100-year-old infrastructure. And we saw what happens with catastrophic water main breaks in Montgomery County. River Road turned into a literal river.
Right.
And we want to avoid that
here all the time. I mean, yep. For those who live in Mount Vernon, you saw a flood on Madison Street recently, and just the way it is in Montgomery County, there's so many examples of this deteriorating infrastructure.
Isn't some of that, some of the stimulus money coming in to redo some of the infrastructure? Baltimore is not part of the money coming in?
There is some money specifically set aside for your water and wastewater systems, and we are aggressively seeking to get as much of that funding as we can. Our partner communities in more affluent areas like Montgomery County think that they should have a greater share of that funding than what was originally proposed. We will argue that we have a much greater need, especially given our citizens' ability to fund those programs.
410-319-8888. Halim in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, how y'all doing?
Hi, Halim.
Good. Considering the job that are proposed to come into the state and the city. The master plan for Baltimore City, I think, is play, work, earn, and learn. The BRAC jobs. Doesn't it make sense to put training systems in place so that the Baltimore residents can take advantage of those jobs, and then we increase the tax bracket, tax revenue, so that you have more money in your budget. I read the master plan, but I never saw in the plan systems being put in place to ensure that the residents take advantage of the jobs that's coming.
The city is definitely looking as we plan for the stimulus funding. We want to see as many of those jobs as possible go to city residents. There's actually stimulus money for employment development. We're going to take advantage of that. So I think you'll see us able to, again, at least in these next few years, step up some of our employment training programs.
4103, we have time? No, we don't have time. I only have a minute left. Folks, I want to encourage all of you, by the way, on April the 1st to join us here at Morgan State University for a live town meeting. Deputy Mayor Andy Frank will be one of the guests, among with community leaders and others, to talk about how we creatively look at the future of our city with stimulus money, where we want it spent, how we want to spend it, what do we want our city to look like, are there more creative ways to envision this community than we do usually. You can join us at that meeting live here at 5 p.m., 5 to 7 p.m., in this building on Morgan State. You can go to weaa.org and find out more about that, or go to steinershow.org and find out more about the about that town meeting. And on April the 2nd, there will be a Citizens Night at the War Memorial Plaza.
In the War Memorial Building at 6 o'clock.
At 6 p.m.
Yes.
To let your voice be heard on the city budget cuts. They will be finalized by the end of April, beginning of May, because the budget has to go to the city council.
And then passed on to the city council. Right.
So that'll be your time. I want to thank both Deputy Mayor Chris Tomascutti and City Budget Director Andrew Klein for being here and talking with the citizens of our community.
Thank you, Mark,
for having us so much.
It was a pleasure.
Good to have you both. This month, the Urbanite unveils the Urbanite Project, its third annual experiment in the power of unconventional collaboration. Urbanite is available in print at more than 800 locations around the Baltimore region and online at urbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and hear new additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.